Hi, Margot.
Hi, Paula. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Margot. Good to see you.
You too.
You guys getting ready for Derby? You be
Yeah.
you me too. I'm having a Derby party this year. So I got home now, I gotta get ready for it. Just some people coming over and watch the big race.
Do you like the race, Margot?
I just watch it on TV. I did go once to the Derby, but
Well,
be better on TV.
yeah. I used to go every year. Every year I'd go. Not anymore. I'm not putting them high heel shoes on and big old hats and dressing. That's too much.
Can't you go in jeans?
Not to where the part I go to is kind of
Oh.
dressy. Yeah. If you went to the grandstands or something, you could wear jeans, you know, but in the gold room and upstairs on Millionaire's Row, you can't, you really
Oh,
shouldn't.
okay.
I don't think of jeans are even allowed or tank tops, stuff like that.
Oh,
So yeah, if I could go and go in jeans, I'd go.
Oh,
can't you go and can't you do that?
It's a very
No.
classy event, unless you go to
Yeah.
Bloomfield
Yeah. Oh, my God.
with all the other drunks.
Oh, no. No. That's wild. I've been there once.
I went to
Almost
the
every
Derby.
year.
I went to the Derby infield when I was like 19 and had a bad trip on acid. I'll never do that again before.
Never again, me either.
Never
Never again.
did again either.
I didn't even see a horse the whole day.
Me either. Nothing but mud that year.
You couldn't get to a window, couldn't get to the bathrooms. They were a mile long. I said, oh, never again.
You can't go unless you've been drinking. That's all I can say. And when I quit, I knew I could go back.
You can't go and have a good time unless you've been drinking. You're
That's
right.
right.
You're right. You see the sights in that
And then
infield.
after it's all over, you go, what race?
When's
What happened?
It's true. I just watch the people. It's a wonderful place to people watch.
Okay, guys,
Especially
I
people
think we're
drinking.
about ready to begin.
Okay.
Let's see, I think we got everybody who's might be a couple of last minute arrivals. But let's just take a moment to get a sense, and everybody's going to do this a little bit differently, but get a sense of the difference between being in higher vibration or lower vibration. What kind of thoughts occupy my mind when I am in lower vibration? What kind of thoughts occupy my mind when I am in higher vibration? And I would imagine when we allow ourselves to become a little bit more objective about the thought energies in lower vibration or higher vibration, that we begin to realize that despite being drawn into it unconsciously a lot of times, is that when we become aware that actually this state of mind of lower vibration becomes rather distasteful, doesn't feel really good. It feels limiting. feels separate. It's not a place where we choose to be consciously. And again, the key to so much of this is awareness. And that awareness gives us the capability of choice. You can't choose if you're not aware. The mystic Gurdjieff put it this way. He said, you have to realize you're in prison before you can get out. If you don't think you're in prison, you're never going to get out. And again, that wasn't a judgment. That was a boost to that whole idea of awareness. And awareness leads to choice. I could see peace instead of this. I could be peaceful instead of this. We ended last week on a almost kind of a meditation in the book. And what I'd like to do this evening is, if you don't mind, to start off with that. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to close your eyes, take a couple of breaths. And be with these suggestions that come from the guides. Imagine that the body itself, which is source in vibration, is expanding, and the energetic field is expanding as well. Imagine that the being that you are, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, the being that you are is expanding your idea of what it is possible to expand to. Just release. Let your awareness go beyond any limitation. Imagine, if you wish, that the being that you are has grown so much that you cannot see the outline of what you thought you were. You encompass the city, the state, country, the planet, the solar system, the galaxy, the known universe. The expansion is never ending and unlimited. You have become an ocean, or a sky in vibration, or even beyond that. Now, from this perspective, where the rules have already been broken, because there are none, you can begin to understand that in this moment, beyond the limitation of form, you may begin to experience yourself beyond the idea of time. Beyond the idea of time. And allow yourself to just sit with that for a moment. If you become distracted, bring your awareness back to spaciousness. And when you're ready to, you can take another deep breath, stretch a bit. Grateful for this part of the journey. Grateful for the awareness that it contains. So here we are on page 100. Beginning at the middle of the page, if you'd like to read along. The idea of time is essential to understand. Your idea of time is based in collective agreement to what time is, how many hours in a day, what constitutes a minute in time. These are agreed upon things. So to move beyond the idea of time may not be to move beyond time itself, but beyond the idea of time as a construct, as a form, as a dictate that you have ascribed power to. You are now as big as the sky, as great as the ocean. And from this perspective, you give permission to release the idea of time itself. You might notice that that happens quite often on Tuesday evening. Then when we start bringing things to a close, it's like, wait a minute, we just started. So it's not a purposeful kind of thing. We say, well, I'm going to be outside of time, because it's not controlled by the mind. But when I let go of the restrictions or the definitions or the limitations that being attached to time gives me, then I am outside of that constructed loop. When Joseph Campbell was being interviewed by Bill Moyers years ago. Of course, you remember that he was famous for that line of follow your bliss. And I remember Bill Moyers one time said, well, what do you mean? What's your bliss? And he said the simple answer to that question was, when you're doing something, whatever it is you're involved in, and time seems to disappear, you know you are in your bliss. Not an emotional state. So if you're, walking in the woods, holding a baby, watching the birds outside, could be very, very simple, listening to a piece of music. Time, essentially, when we're not locked into that, time does not exist. So my bliss is when I am in timelessness. Now, the trick is, or the paradox is, I don't stop and say, oh, I'm in timelessness right now, right? Because what that does is that just immediately puts me back in the world again. Mm-hmm. But when we are in that expansive state of mind, we're not thinking about being in that expansive state of mind. We're not observing it. We're in it. And I'm sure each one of us has some, let's call them activities for want of a better word. Each one of us has activities that produce that expansiveness, that openness. Could be music, could be poetry, could be your own music, could be something you write, could be something you listen to. Could be playing with a pet, could be walking in the woods, gardening. One of my favorite stories from Ram Dass, This was, I think it was before he met his guru, when he was still doing a lot of experimentation with psychedelics. And he said he was together with some of his buddies, Tim Leary and a couple of other guys, and they would organize this sort of lecture series. And he was probably the best public speaker in the group, he would usually be elected to be the speaker. And he said everybody walked around looking very holy. He said we weren't, we just looked that way. Everybody walked around looking very holy. And most of us were dressed in white. So, you know, we had white linen pants and white linen shirts and white sandals, or probably brown sandals, but they weren't white. But anyway, he talked about this one particular lecture he was giving about transformation, altered state of consciousness. And he said, usually the crowd that we would attract was very predictable. There were usually young people who were hippies, or looked like hippies anyway. And so he said, I happened to walk up on the stage of this one particular lecture we were giving, and right in the center of the room was this older lady who was probably in her 50s. And he said she had on very practical shoes, and she had this hat with sort of wooden cherries on it. She didn't fit in with this crowd. And so he decided to direct some of what he was saying to this, who he felt, this kind of poor lady, and who was kind of somewhat out of place. And every time he would say something about altered states of consciousness and being real and timelessness, she would start nodding her head, almost encouraging more and more. And so he thought after a while, well, maybe she has a nervous tic. She just didn't really quite get it, okay? Nodding her head all the time. So he said, I'm going to raise the bar. I'm going to talk about something even more outrageous. And so he did that, and she kept nodding her head. Well, he got through the lecture, and people were surrounding him and shaking his hand and giving him a hug and saying thank you for the wonderful thoughts and the wonderful pieces of information you passed out. And she was part of the line, and she walked up to him and said, oh, I want to thank you. That was perfect. That explained everything that I'm going through in my own life right now. And he looked at her. He knew she didn't drop acid, okay? And he looked at her and he said, what's the deal? And he said, how do you know? How do you know? And she looked at him with sort of a conspiring look on her face, and she said, I crochet. And he flipped. He discovered that here I am on this marvelous spiritual path, you know, sucking up psychedelics right and left and doing this and doing that. And here's this little old lady who's getting to the same place I am, right, by crocheting. I didn't know you could do that. So it doesn't matter what the trip is. What matters is giving ourselves the opportunity to begin to discover what contributes for me or for you, what contributes to being in that expansive state of consciousness, for want of a better word. And you know, what's really interesting sometimes for me is, let me take an example for me is when I'm doing music, especially when I'm playing and singing my own music, whether it's practicing for something or just doing it because I love doing it, I can become lost in that timelessness. And then immediately sometimes another thought will come along and say, well, you got to do the dishes. Mm-hmm. You didn't dust the floor today. You know, so you really can't do this now. You have to do that other thing. I make up rules for myself. I'm sure none of you ever do that, right? But I can't really relax until I clean the car or just they do that. And so it's like, you know, here I am in this marvelous state of timelessness. And all of a sudden my mind creeps in and says, well, you can't do that. You need to do something in the outside world before you can relax, before you can be open to deeper consciousness. And of course, when the list is endless. So I got to remember, this is just my part of the trip. I got to remember that that inner voice, that limited inner voice of ego and personality is still going to be there and is bound and determined sometimes to interrupt my sense of timelessness, to remind me that I really being in timelessness is not a very good thing. You're not being very responsible. So pick up the mop, right? Get the toilet brush, right? Do what you're supposed to be doing. And all I'm saying is that that's what happens to me quite often. Unless I find something that is just totally transcendent. And so maybe it might be listening to, I have to put headphones on for this, but let's say listening to the Emperor Concerto and just kind of letting it out. Now, if I don't have headphones on and it's just coming out of the speakers on my TV or the speakers on my computer, I'm just wide open to having my limited ego pop in and say, hey, what about this? What about that? So it's almost like I have to block out all the other sensations to be comfortable in this particular state of mind. Or sometimes it might be walking in nature. So what happens is I'm keyed in to a couple of my senses, all right, that kind of keep me almost surrounded, keep me comfortable in this spaciousness, in this place of timelessness. So all I'm suggesting this evening is that it might be really helpful for each one of us to find or to practice some of those things that do that or help create that state of mind for us, and recognize that the ego doesn't always completely disappear the way we would like it to. It still might interrupt the process. And not to get annoyed at it, because it's just being our ego, to sort of pat it on the head and say, you know, I think I'll get back to walking in nature. I think I'll get back to my music. Now stay in this moment of great expansion and timelessness, and imagine for a moment, because this is true, by the way, that you are moving to a new plane of expression where time itself has never been chosen. Nobody chose to invent this thing called time. We just are. I am in my I am-ness. Time itself has never been chosen. Where the infinite now is the only expression that you may claim. And you would be in truth here, because that's all there is. In the upper room, the divine self as you, the divine, there's those words again, the divine self as you, knows herself in infinity because she is not bound by the constructs of time, but in alignment to her eternal nature. Eternity has no time. Eternity is not measured because it has no beginning, it has no end. That's what makes it eternity. Your eternal nature inhabits the ethereal eternal plane. And as you have lifted in vibration to the upper room, you may claim your experience here in timelessness. It's not like we found out with manifestation. I'm not creating a sense of timelessness. A sense of timelessness already exists. You already exist in eternity. You can't not exist in eternity. Now, do you realize that a whole lot? Do you realize that most of the time? I don't. My day sometimes is created out of a sense of time. Oh, I've got my guitar lesson at 12:30. And then I say, well, what can I get in before that? And then what can I get in after that? Still blocked in with time. Even when I'm meditating, I think I've shared this with you guys before. I've got a timer that times me for 20 minutes. And it always, it's one of the apps I've got on my phone. So as soon as I press the button, it goes for 20 minutes, and then this little bell starts ringing after 20 minutes are over. I cannot tell you the number of times that I have been in meditation and thought to myself, well, I forgot to set the alarm. And I'll open my eyes and look at it and it'll say 20 seconds left. And my mind goes, see, you know, it was right there. Or 3 minutes or 5 minutes. It's like almost like I can't stand not being in time. Isn't that weird?
Well, I think that's very natural. I mean, that's the way we live.
I can't stand. I don't think I've ever said that out loud. I can't stand not being in time. My ego can't stand being in time. My personality can't stand being in time. My divine consciousness is outside of time anyway. There's nothing, I don't have to create anything around that. It just is. It lives in eternity. Or paradoxically, it lives in the eternal present moment. Both of those things are true. It lives in the eternal present moment.
But thank you. I feel like I cannot get myself out of linear or time thinking. It's like the only way my brain seems to know how to work is through keeping track of the clock or the calendar all the time, no matter what I'm doing. If I'm listening to music, I know how many songs played, so I know about how much time has passed. I don't even try to do that.
But what you're saying is very true, because that my ego consciousness, my lower self, my whatever you want to call it, my lower consciousness, my lower vibrational state, is always going to be attracted to the limitation of time. That's my intellect. That's where it lives. My intellect, I can't say, well, I think I'll let my intellect live in eternity, because it doesn't live there. It's structured. It's a construct to live in time. And so don't try to get out of time by using your intellect. I think I'll think of some things that get me out of time. I think I'll think about some things that put me in timelessness. It's not going to work. Well, when we talk about meditation, and I mean this in a very broad sense of the word, there are formal states of meditation that many of us practice. But meditation also the essential nature of meditation is being outside of time. I am in a state of consciousness that is also reflective of timelessness. And I'm not thinking about being in timelessness, I just am. And I recognize how difficult that is sometimes. And we're not here to judge the difficulty of it or the non-difficulty of it. We're just saying, hey, let's look. If I realize that my lower consciousness, my lower vibration, my lower self, my limited self, my ego consciousness, my personality consciousness lives in a state of time all the time. When I recognize that, I recognize that I have a choice. I can be there, stay there, or I can, first of all, I can find some ways to be in timelessness, which might take some effort on our part. But once I come to a point I realize I have a choice. Now, most of the time for me, my choice is not, I'm not going to say, well, I choose to be in timelessness. I mean, that would be nice, but it's not like pushing a button and all of a sudden I'm there, right? My choice usually involves, how am I going to perceive myself with this person for this particular situation in my life? Am I going to perceive it in higher consciousness or lower consciousness? Does it open my heart or does it close my heart? Keeping it really, really simple. And I know that for each one of us, we've probably had that choice a number of times today. And most of the time when I make a choice to keep my heart open, it might not last, or it might just be that split second. See, when we're talking about timelessness, we're not measuring anything. So a split second is the same as eternity. So it might have been just that split second of open-heartedness to another human being or to my own predicament as a human being on planet Earth. Could be just that what seemingly is a split second is actually eternity in the now moment. So I'm not creating that. I'm in it. And it's only after that that I come to realize, oh, I was in eternity for that moment, or for that. We use the language of time anyway. I was in eternity. I was in eternity, and then I came back. Was that real? Of course it was.
Jerry.
Yeah.
I've even heard people say, when you're dying, your time is up. Well, that's not even true. That's not even true.
That's really interesting.
Isn't that right? I mean, no, it's not. It's
time just to go, Grasshopper. Yeah.
It's just a new. But what I wanted to say was the only time I feel like I can be in timelessness is when I'm not living this dream I'm in here on Earth. Okay. I'm not living the dream. Here, it's hard not to be a part of the earth and be a part of what this dream. But when I think about life being eternity and there is no time, that's when I'm not living this life. I'm in an eternal state of mind, a truth that I don't find here.
There are no limitations. Mm-hmm. But that's a great example of, your time's up. No, it isn't, as you said. Well, yes, it is in a way. Your time's up because what's going to happen next is you're going to be experiencing eternity.
Exactly.
The image that I had when I was listening to you, Diane, was from that old TV show, Kung Fu, with Kwai Shang Kane,
who
grew up in a Buddhist monastery. And the abbot of the monastery, the teacher, would hold this rock and little pebble in his hand. And the test for when you were ready to go would be that you could grab the rock before the abbot closed his hand around it. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of each show, right, he'd be there trying to grab it. And the master would open his hand and the rock would still be there. And the last one before he moved over, before he left China for the States, goes through the same routine. And you see the master open his hand and it's empty. Mm-hmm. And he says, his nickname for him was Grasshopper. Time to go, Grasshopper.
Mm-hmm. Jerry.
I love that show. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Jerry. The Dalai Lama, I saw an interview with the Dalai Lama one time who has an obsession with watches, talking about time and his theories of, we have all the time in the world. We have nothing but time. And he laughed, he laughs at himself so much when you see, and he says, and I have this obsession with watches. People give him watches all the time because he loves watches and he doesn't wear a watch.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I love it.
I do too.
Thank you. Let's see.
Hey, Jerry.
Yes, Jim.
Yeah. So I can't recall the last time I wore a watch. I don't know what the decision was. I just decided I didn't. I mean,
your phone made the decision.
It's there and glance at it, but just in terms of this whole timelessness is, I don't know, maybe it's my own personal thing with respect to, I rarely talk about my age. And because it's my thing with respect to is that this is just a temporary incarnation at this level. There's going to be a next. And so I don't want to put a number. Well, I'm this, that. So I just always kind of back away from that. And I'm always having students always ask that question. Well, you know, Mr. Wheeler, how old are you? They'll ask all the time. And I said, you know, really, truly, I forgot. I just can't recall. And I don't really even celebrate. I don't call my birthday a birthday. I call it my appearance day. And someone would say, well, what does that mean? And they'll kind of look at me kind of quizzical, like, it's when I appeared in this incarnation. And then so I could always kind of say, oh, he's really lost his rocker. but the thing is, those who really kind of know me know when that date, they'll wish me happy appearance day, Jim. Not many people refer to it as a birthday. So it's just, you know, happy appearance day. I appear in this incarnation. So, you know, it's just, you know, and I've even...
Showed up in a body again, right?
Right, thanks.
I had a thought last Sunday. I just wanted to share with you guys because I thought it's probably pertinent with this idea of time, but it just sort of popped out. I said, I wonder how many incarnations it took for Mother Teresa to become Mother Teresa. One of my favorite stories about time or age, our middle granddaughter approached Margot when she was probably about 5 or 6. And she said, Marmy, that's what they call her, Marmy. Marmy, is Grandpa Jerry a real grown-up? I said, that was the highest compliment I've ever received. Is Grandpa Jerry a real grown-up? So how old you are, what time is, not terribly essential. When there is no time, there is no limitation. There is no when. There is no what if. Because everything is expressed in this perfect now. And what is required is known to you through the requirement, not through the asking of it, or the requirement that you would seek to be fulfilled. When one is thirsty, one knows water. When one is tired, one knows sleep. When one is one with God, one knows no separation. In infinity, in the infinite now, you are met in the vibration, in tone, in agreement to the true self who exists beyond time, but may know herself in time through the form that you have chosen to experience this life in. Wow, now there's a whole cold volume right there. In infinity, in the infinite now, you are met in vibration, in tone, in agreement to the true self who exists beyond time. But you may know herself in time through the form that you have chosen to experience this life in. I can live in timelessness. I can be in timelessness. And at the same time, I can know myself in time. I can know you in time. because that doesn't go away. That's part of my classroom. It's part of my learning. How do I know something or someone in time, including myself, and how do I exist in timelessness at the same time?
Jerry, I have a question for you.
Okay.
This is about the guides. Are the guides souls that have passed on and this is their chosen work to help enlighten, or are they, what are they?
The guides have described themselves, some of which are beings who have lived on planet Earth.
Okay.
And who are now in immaterial form. Right? Some of whom in the group, by the way, the group consciousness calls itself Melchizedek.
Okay.
Melchizedek is a name that comes up in the Old Testament. It's sort of a symbol of priesthood, holiness, sanctification. So some of the guides have experienced life here on planet Earth. Some have experienced life in other dimensions, and some have never had a body at all. But they are all working together as a major force to educate those who truly wish to be educated.
Okay.
So it's kind of a mixed bag of from what I get, from what I gather. And that, however, the purpose that they intend is the same.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Jerry, I've got a question about incarnations.
Yeah.
The incarnations. If we are all one with God, why would we have repeated incarnations as someone else? It just popped into my mind when you said, I wonder how many incarnations it took for Mother Teresa to get where she was. She's always been who she is. So what are these incarnations? I just don't understand that part. Maybe I don't need to.
You probably don't need
to. A new dream? Just a new dream?
Okay. The what we call God, what we refer to as the energy of unconditional love, and I equate those two, right? Is forever expanding, and so that when we incarnate with a particular set of lessons to learn or things to heal, that on one level, actually, what we are doing is we are contributing to the expansiveness of God or unconditional love. In other words, we are bringing to what is called God, we are bringing to God, because we are all part of God anyway. But we are bringing that consciousness to God through our experience here on planet Earth. We are contributing to the expansion of unconditional love. So whenever I get confronted with something, it might take me a while, it might take me more than one lifetime to approach that thing or that attitude or that other personality with a sense of total unconditional love. But when I am able to do that, I am adding that to this, it's hard to say, this huge being that encompasses all of it. I am adding that to the experience of God. So it's not just working out my shit, which is one way of looking at life. It's just another karmic debt I'm working out. It's actually contributing to the expansiveness and the essence of unconditional love. And it will go on forever.
Mm-hmm. Mother Teresa was not always Mother Teresa.
No, she wasn't. Buddha wasn't always Buddha.
Buddha was not always Buddha. They had other livings and learned until they reached these stages of consciousness that were so elevated.
When Buddha became enlightened, or had enlightenment come upon him under the Bo tree, and had this aura about him that everybody could see, mm-hmm. people would ask him, you know, are you a god? Are you a saint? You know, he just said, no, I'm awake. But the story mm-hmm. continues that he remembered all of his incarnations that led up to this one, where he reached nirvana, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. And his first memory was he was an ox in Hades with all of these demons poking him with pitchforks and doing all kinds of nasty stuff. Right? And at this one point, one of these foul demons was getting ready to smash another ox mm-hmm. over the head with this sledgehammer. And Buddha, as an ox, decided he was going to put his head to block the blow and take it on himself out of compassion for his brother. And he said, that was the beginning. That was the beginning of my journey towards enlightenment.
Good story.
You know, Jerry, with that, for me, how that resonates with me, it takes the pressure, if I want to call it pressure, off the living or off the being in this incarnation, knowing that my soul is in a constant state of evolution, of evolving. Mm-hmm. And the essence has been here before in some sort of other mm-hmm. incarnation that I personally can't recall. And as you said, and it resonates with me, there are lessons for me to learn in this particular incarnation. And there'll be lessons for me to learn in the next and the next. And so it's I feel a tremendous amount of burden lifted off, knowing that I'm in a constant state of becoming, if that makes sense.
Yes. And see, another piece of this is that because we are all connected to one another, we are all participating on some level of consciousness in the oneness, right? In the truth, is that everything that I do, everything that I choose, especially when I choose unconditional love, affects all other beings. It's not just my trip, not just your trip, right? Mm-hmm. My openness to forgiveness, my openness to compassion, my openness to unconditional love affects all beings, everyone and everything. Oh, and you know what? There have probably been times in your life when you've had an encounter with another being, kind of out of the blue, maybe, something you can't explain, something that, you know, probably will never repeat itself. And a little voice inside says, that's why you're here. I had that happen a couple of Sundays ago. One of our ladies from church, Melba Harris, and I did the music for our Unity service. And there was a Margot sitting next to Margot, or close by, were a couple who were just visiting Louisville. And had been connected with Unity for a while. So they were visiting various Unity churches. And anyway, one of the songs that I did was called The Child's Prayer. It was about a little child talking to God and sort of in despairing, but then than God answering that prayer, coming back with lovingness, compassion. And this woman turned to Margot and said, "Oh, what, could I possibly get a copy of that song? Because my son is going through a really difficult divorce and their child is having a very difficult time. And we think this might really, really be helpful and healing for him." And immediately when I heard that story, I said, "That's why I'm here.
That's why you want to."
Now, I think all of us have experienced moments like that. Mm-hmm. And we probably will continue to experience those. That's part of our awareness. That's why I'm here.
I say that to myself as someone who, and again, I don't see myself as this educator. I see myself as an encourager and planting seeds. And so when I wake up to that, I said, I'm just planting seeds. That's why I'm here. And I look at my classroom and I imagine these 8-year-olds, 18, 20, 30. And so I don't know the seeds that I'm planting, but let me continue to plant these seeds of encouragement, of hope, of peace, of love.
Thank you. It's true. I'm not sure whether you heard this or not, but that wonderful being, Harry Belafonte, made his transition today.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And he was famous for saying, I'm not an entertainer turned activist. I'm an activist who happened to be an entertainer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I found that a great, is sort of like Gandhi. When a reporter was running after the train Gandhi was in and said, "Gandhi, can you give a message to your people, your friends, their relatives, people you're working with?" And he had a little brown paper bag and he scribbled on the paper bag and he threw it out the window to the reporter and said, "My life is my message." You know, and I wonder how many of us could say that. I'm still working on that one. Okay. My life is my message. Wow. And that was so spontaneous. It was obviously very real because he was sitting, he didn't say, "Well, I think I'll think of something really, really good, important to say." But that was just the truth that just you exuded from him. "My life is my message." Wow.
I get really confused, Jerry, when I do Course in Miracles and it tells me that we're dreaming this life. And then for someone to say, you know, "This is my life." For me, I just get so confused because I feel like what it's all about is we're already one with God. And that's all there is. That's it.
So drop your confusion. Anything that confuses the mind to that extent, that takes me away from my awareness, is not worth thinking about. Because it's not about figuring something out. You know, if you get a sense that you are living your truth with that sense of oneness, keep doing it.
Because everything else is just commentary.
That's where I find my timelessness.
Okay. Practice it. What Jim just said is, I think it was the story that I heard around that was a rabbi was once asked about what's the most important thing in scripture, in studying the Talmud. And he said, "Love God and love your neighbor. All the rest is commentary."
Love.
All the rest is commentary. Could say all the rest is bullshit, okay?
No.
Am I allowed to say that? All the rest is bullshit.
You just did.
It's meaningless.
True.
So let's take a couple minutes to to rest in timelessness, which is what we've been doing the last half hour or 45 minutes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a couple minutes to just breathe in, breathe out. Just settle. Let your mind do whatever your mind does. It's not about quieting the mind so much, it's about detaching from the thinking mind. So it becomes a voice that's still chattering away, but it's down the hall someplace. Who am I without that voice, without that monkey chatter? And just gently and lovingly allow yourself to be. Gently and lovingly allow yourself to be. I have a body, but I am not my body. I have feelings and emotions, but I am not my feelings. I am not my emotions. I have a mind and I have thoughts, and yet I am not my mind and not my thoughts. I am more than my body. I am more than my feelings. I am more than my thoughts. I am eternal. I am in timelessness. I rest in the truth of who I am, the truth of who you are. In this sacred presence, everything exists. There's no place to go. There's nothing more to do. get a sense of the gentleness of that, as well as its power. And as you begin to come back to the realization of this physical space, this physical vehicle that you inhabit as part of your journey here, to know that I am not limited by form or someone else's rules. I'm not limited by time or space. Get a sense of your heartbeat, your breathing. The rhythm of life, which is timeless. And when you're ready to, you can take another deep breath, stretch a bit, open your eyes. We have transcended time and space. And allowed ourselves to be touched by a deeper truth of who we are. So until next time. Until next time. Get that?
Well, next time.
Oh, no, there it is again.
We can't escape it. It's happy trails.
Happy trails to you.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Jerry, thank you for sharing your music with us. That was beautiful.
Oh, you're awesome. And
it was beautiful, thank Jerry.
It was.
Your voice is lovely also.
Thanks for your feedback.
Like an angel. Well, thank you for the message.
I was very glad to share that with you guys. Just to let you know what I was doing Sunday. So take care, you all. We'll see you again soon, okay?
Thank you all. Okay. So much. Bye, bye, Jerry. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Good luck. That's Bert.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah.